Well, my haere mai, it's good to have your company for Country Life. I'm Carol Stiles.
And I'm Duncan Smith. Kia ora. Today, we're catching up with a few would-be dairy farmers. They're on a taster course to see if it's for them.
Later on in our feature story, we're at a Banks Peninsula herb farm that saw a spike in sales over the lockdown for its health remedies.
We meet a woman who put her hands deep into her pockets and, with some partners, spent more than $100,000 on a bull last week. Steak, anyone?
And we hear about a man who gave his farm away and wanted it to be used to introduce townies to farming. But first to our look around the country, where Jack Frost has been busy. It's been a bit more wintry and even a little frosty in Northland. The rain is topping up dams and springs are running, bringing smiles to farmers and growers. Farmers are pretty well off now for feed. They're downloading heavier cattle to the works. Store markets are firming up, especially for females, which have been hard to move of late. Around Pukekohe, after a stop-go start to the week with rain, showers and fine periods, clearer weather from Wednesday brought frosty mornings. There are many potatoes in storage following a loss of sales for chips, and growers are looking to find a market for them.
In central Waikato, things are looking very good. The average pasture cover is much higher than usual for the time of year. Despite heavy rain, it's reasonably dry underfoot and soil temperatures are still in the double digits. Farmers are getting organised for calving. There's still some disquiet, though, among dairy farmers over next season's payout, and the price of palm kernel is causing some concern. Our contact in the Bay of Plenty was enjoying a beautiful but chilly start to the day when we rang. He's 3 weeks away from calving and as well set up as he could be. There's plenty of grass around and cows are in good condition. A human birth around calving time is also being thrown into the mix, so things could be a little busier than normal. Kiwi fruit pruning is just getting going. It's feeling a little more normal after the weird times around harvest. Labour issues mean a delay in getting started, though. This time last year, they were a third of the way through pruning the gold variety. With uncertainty around the supply of RSE workers this season, there's likely to be a lower skill set and higher worker turnover in the orchard over pruning, and things could get a little testy towards spring.
It's been horrible weather in King Country and wet underfoot, but they did need the rain and it's a good help for pasture. Our contact says he's still trying to fatten a few heifers. Tail end lambs are going to the works. After ewe pregnancy scanning, he's pleased with his 160% rate, but he's hearing horror stories. Some farms are down 20% due to the lack of tucker earlier on. After a sluggish run-up to winter, it certainly arrived this week in Taranaki. There have been 20 to 30 millimetres of rain in some parts and some very cold days. Calving happens shortly and most farmers in the region are okay for labour. One farmer says there's a lot of confidence around. Previously, dairy farmers would be cautious around mentioning they milk cows for a living, he says, but they're now proudly calling themselves food producers.
A wine grower on the east coast was having smoko on a crisp, clear day when we rang. It's pruning time in the vineyard. He has enough interns from overseas to help out with the job. It's been pretty chilly, and there's been enough rain to keep the farmers happy. Next month he's bottling new young wines. The 2020 vintage is the best in 37 years, he says. A number of new kiwi fruit orchards are springing up around the area. Central Hawke's Bay, the centre of the earlier drought, has had fantastic rain, and it's hoped recovery will be boosted by the warmer temperatures forecast for the coming week. Dams are only slowly filling as water soaks into parched land. A huge amount of stock has left the region, and the lamb drop is forecast to be 30% down on previous years. Looking ahead, there will be some good prices paid when it comes to restocking.
Apart from the recent cold snap, it's been a kind winter so far in Manawatū. A sheep and beef farmer there has had pleasing results from ewe scanning at 175%, although back on his record year last year. But he's heard via the scanner of not-so-good results among a handful of farmers where the drought pinched at the wrong time. He's not getting too carried away with the optimism around beef prices. He says it's nice being social again in the Mai Mai and around the sports fields. It's been an awful week weather-wise in Wairarapa. Even the woolly sheep have been keen to find shelter from the rain, wind and cold. Scanning's been done here too, and the first of our contact lambs are due in September. A few mitigating factors have led to a lower rate than last year at 172%.
Across Cook Strait, it was a damp start to the week in the Tasman district, but by midweek it was fine with clear skies and frosts. There has been a little bit of growth, but farmers are worried that because of the drought, there's not enough grass to get through to spring. Depends how the next month goes, whether there will be a crisis in August. And that concern extends to the numerous lifestyle blocks around Nelson. There's a feeling many are running out of pasture and they need to ask the likes of Rural Support Trust for help. The next comments relate to much of the land from North Canterbury up through Marlborough, which is still being affected by the drought. Despite some recent rain, there's a huge concern around how farms will recover. Until growth exceeds stock needs in spring, farmers will be stressed. May was fantastically good, which saved some feed covers, but it risks being a green drought, and reserves farmers thought they had will disappear quickly and have no energy in it. It's tempting for farmers to feed annual grasses they've planted, but they'll get trampled a lot now and again not have much energy value. If they can hold off until spring, it would be much better. Apparently, some farmers have really panicked about feed and are buying poor quality, expensive hay just so they have something on hand.
Soil moisture is much better by the time you reach central Canterbury. A very wet week there saw many areas receiving over 100 millimetres. There's been no sunshine. The rain has been needed to fill dams and soils after a very dry summer. Snow is still only at high altitudes and not down to the plains at all. The west coast has had a wonderful sunny week and farms are looking great. Central Otago had 40 millimetres of rain. There was no snow with the rain, which is unusual. Mind you, it still managed to drop to -7 degrees on Friday morning in the Ida Valley area. Initial ewe scanning results are showing a good number of lambs should be born in spring.
Southland has had a few frosts this week. There hasn't been a lot of rain, but things are damp because it's drizzled and there's no wind. Stock are doing well on crops. The yields weren't great this year, but animals are getting the maximum use out of them because it stayed relatively dry underfoot, so that's the silver lining. Sheep scanning is just starting. With poor grass growth earlier in the year, there could be a bit of a dip in lamb numbers. However, our contact near Waimahaka is looking forward to his 55th lambing. Over to the west, the snow is halfway down on the Takatimu Ranges. Another farmer says he has $20,000 worth of supplements on farm. He panicked leading into lockdown when he had about 45% of his lambs still to go to the meatworks, when normally in April he'd have had only 10% left. They've all been killed now, but as he says, the impact of COVID will appear on his balance sheet this time next year.
You're listening to Country Life on RNZ National, 101 FM.
A few weeks ago on Country Life, we ran a story about Dairy NZ's new free entry-level training courses for people considering changing careers and getting into dairy farming. Well, Dairy NZ says more than 300 people have made inquiries about the course and 93 have signed up. The first of the Farm Ready courses has been underway this week, just out of Hamilton. Ashley Innes was one of the students.
Well, I only finished school last year, so I've just been doing part-time work and filling in gaps until I find out what I actually want to do.
What made you apply?
My mum just saw the thing online and was like, you should try this. It's probably up your alley with being outdoors and not having to do a lot of book work.
So far, how's it going?
It's so great. Like, everything's... The tutors are amazing. They're teaching us, like, so well and going into detail with what we need to know.
Can you see yourself working on a farm?
Oh, definitely. I've applied for jobs already. And I've had an interview and it's, I want to be on these farms, it's amazing. I love it, like I've never really had a goal for myself, but this is great.
What does your mum think?
She thinks it's amazing me being in the outdoors and doing something that I want to do.
I'm talking to Tana McIntyre. Tana, you've put your hand up and you want to work in dairy. What was it about this campaign that appealed?
Pretty much just to learn some new stuff and get onto a farm and get amongst it, eh?
What were you doing before?
I was doing house removal, but I was unemployed for 6 months, just doing nothing really. Yes, and I was looking to go on to farming to get a job to so we could get a nice house, pretty much, because I'm sick of living. We're staying in a caravan at the moment, so I wanted to get a house. And then her mum pointed us in the direction of jumping on to this course.
So that's Caitlin McRae, your partner. Yep. Yeah. What were you doing, Caitlin?
I was working in a bakery a couple months before that, but then I had left that job. And then, yeah, I was doing the same as him, just sitting around doing nothing really. And then we'd seen on Facebook that there was a course for farming and we thought that we'll just give it a go. It was only 3 weeks, so it wouldn't hurt to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you think so far?
Oh, it's been lovely. Yeah, like, we've learned so much and the tutors are actually so helpful. They make you feel good because they tell you as soon as you get here, no question is a stupid question.
Yeah.
Especially when you're working on a farm.
Can you imagine yourself, you know, having a career in dairying?
Oh, definitely.
Oh, yeah, I reckon after seeing it all, I haven't worked on a farm before, but now seeing it all, I definitely reckon that this might actually be where I belong.
Yeah, I grew up on farms, so I've always been attracted to it. But when I was younger, I always wanted to go to the city, got to the city and just wanted to go straight back, eh?
Where are you from?
I'm from all over the place, actually. I lived in Australia for 5 years, mainly in the cities, so coming out into a rural area is pretty cool.
And what about you, Taylor? Where are you from?
Me, I'm originally from Whangarei, but moved to Tauranga when I was about 6 and just been there ever since.
And you'll be outside. Today it's not raining, but it's pretty cold. Is that okay with you?
No, it doesn't bother me. Better than working indoors.
The salaries aren't too bad either.
Oh, no. They're good. It's good money.
Pretty decent.
Plus, you don't have to pay rent when you're on a farm because you get a house supplied to you.
Yeah, and you're also getting, you'll get meat and stuff from them, milk, all of that. So you're getting some food.
It all saves you money.
The next thing is you're learning about stockmanship.
Yep, so we're learning the fly zones of the cows, which is where they're comfortable with people walking around them and observing them. So one thing that you need to do is you don't make full eye contact with the cow because it scares them away, and you just slowly approach them from the front, try not to get behind them because they can't see you.
Have you had anything to do with calves yet?
We did get to see a couple calves yesterday. Apparently two have been born yesterday as well, so we might be going to get them from the paddocks, which will be super exciting. I can't wait for that. But yeah, the calves are just so cute. They've got this little Jersey girl in there and she's just got the most gorgeous coat, most gorgeous eyes.
Watching them try and drink the milk out of their teats is hilarious as well because they just fight over a few teats and it's cute because they smother each other with their salivary, but it's got milk all through it. So there'll be strings of milky saliva all over them. It's pretty cute.
They're just so adorable.
This course finishes, what, in a couple of weeks' time?
Yeah, we got one more. Oh, so this is our second week, and then we got one more week after that, which is all to do with
machinery.
So we'd be driving all the vehicles and using all the machines on the farm. So when we jump on the farm, we know what to do.
And what do you hope will happen then?
Oh, I just hope that we'll ace it and we'll get a job. And
yeah, hopefully we just get onto a nice farm.
Yeah, I'm just hoping to get onto a good farm. I really want to just start working. Just get out here and get some experience.
Same here.
Thank you. Thanks, and good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Taylor McIntyre and Caitlin McRae ending that report. There are 7 students on the course, 6 of them are women. There are thought to be about 1,000 vacancies for workers on dairy farms.
Penny Hoogerbrug is the studmaster of Kaharoe Angus in Gisborne. She and husband Pete, together with another local bull stud, have just set a record at the recent bull sales in the district. They bought a bull, simply known as Lot 8, for $104,000.
So we went into partnership with Ben and Kylie Johnson from O'Reary Angus, and they are up in the hills out of Gisborne here at Pihiri. We're really pleased to be in partnership with them because geographically it's going to work really well having the bull in the Gisborne region.
Tell us how the auction played out, how it worked.
Oh, well.
And how nerve-wracking was it?
It was always nerve-wracking when you want to buy a bull because, of course, you would like, you know, we all want to secure the bull that we've decided on. It's taken quite a lot of, it's quite a build-up to decide, make that final decision on that bull purchase. And this was a bull that ticked all the boxes for us, so we were pretty keen to secure him. The auction started and we decided that we wouldn't kick in until a bit later in the piece, but that was 85,000 when we started bidding.
And who was putting their hand up?
Well, Ben started. Ben started, and then, you know, it went quite a bit higher than we had budgeted for, so...
How did you communicate on that?
We were just talking quietly, and then they cottoned on to the fact that it was Kaharau and O'Reary. So then the auctioneer plays his part, of course, and he did a very good job in luring us into spending more money. So it was pretty exciting.
Very exciting, I imagine. And when the hammer went down on $104,000, how did you feel?
Yes. Oh, well, just almost in shock, really. You know, it's it all happened so quickly, and, it was pretty exciting to...
And I
pretty, very, very exciting to secure him.
And I understand this is a record. What sort of a record has been set here?
Yeah, so this is the highest price ever paid for a bull on a non-farm sale.
And what sort of reaction have you been getting?
Oh, very, very positive. Yes, it's all on Facebook. It's even been posted on the Australian site, studstocksales.com.
Have you already had interest from people wanting... to use your bull semen?
Yes, we have, and that's very complimentary, but we're just wanting to just let the dust settle and see how things play out in the next few weeks, and then we'll make some decisions, and obviously that'll be in consultation with Ben and Kylie and Pete and myself before we move on with any major decisions about him.
And just tell us a little bit about him. What made him so attractive?
Well, he was the whole package. Yeah, he ticked all the boxes. He's phenotypically correct. He's a very deep, thick bull.
And phenotypically correct, meaning he's very good looking.
He's very good looking. It's got that really lovely sort of boxy shape that I love in a bull, deep to the flank, right through. Great top line, you know, good back end, bone, and structurally sound on the ground, which is very, very important. Because our philosophy has always been to breed strong hill country cattle for our commercial clients. And a lot of our clients are from the Gisborne region who are farming on steep hill country. So the bulls have really got to do their job, their mating job on the hill country. Their feet have got to last, they've got to be able to get around the hills. So not only are we taking into consideration how the bull looks, there's also the pedigree and the EBVs that need to be focused on.
And the EBVs?
EBVs are estimated breeding values. We also take into account his pedigree. So he's got some Summit Crest Complete back there in the background, which is an American bull, but tempered by then a lot of New Zealand breeding. And also goes back to Braveheart of Stern, who's been a very successful and famous bull in New Zealand from Stern Angus in the South Island. And we all love Braveheart, so that was another tick for this bull. We will definitely be collecting semen from him, obviously for our own use as well as for sale, and then we will be using him for natural mating as well with a mob of cows, so we'll share the mating season with Ben and Kylie. If there is enough interest in his semen, then he will go to the Tararua Breeding Centre, where he's quarantined for a month, and then semen is collected. He has to undergo a whole lot of tests for all sorts of diseases and things, and that semen will be collected, and then that qualifies for export.
And what good sort of demand is there for Angus bull semen?
If it's an exceptional bull, there is very good demand, and I can't say what the demand's going to be for this guy yet, but we hope it's going to be good.
How long will it be before you get your money back, in other words?
There's always an investment that has to be put back into sire bulls. You know, we're in the business of breeding bulls, so we're always having to think ahead and offer something new to our clients. And, of course, we also sell stud bulls to other stud breeders in New Zealand, so they're always looking for something new as well, as I am. It's a long-term investment. His genetics will be in our herd for a long time.
What is driving the market at the moment so that these bulls do fetch these high prices? Because yours hasn't been the only high price fetch this week.
No, no.
Well, there was a $92,000 bull also sold.
Yes, that's right. Angus is a great breed. You know, it really is. It's very popular in New Zealand. They're great foragers. They're good doers. They grow on early. And in the bigger picture, demand from overseas for quality Angus New Zealand beef, grass-fed beef.
So at the moment, the bull is known as Lot 8.
Yes, that's right.
224.
Yes, that's right.
What have you got in mind for a name?
Well, we're talking about it and we're thinking about it, but we would like some help. So if anybody out there has got a great idea for a name for our bull, we'd love to hear from them. And we will put together a lovely package of goodies for that person.
Well, that's a challenge for our Country Life listeners.
Yes,
so if you've got an idea for a name.
A good, strong name.
Send it in.
Yeah, send it in. Thank you very much. Yes, that would be great.
Penny Hoogerbrug speaking to Sally Round. We'll put a link to the Kaharo Stud Facebook page on the Country Life webpage so you can send them your ideas for names.
Hi, my name is Sean DeMello. I work for Rocket Lab out of the Mahia Peninsula. I've been listening to Country Life on RNZ National.
For our next story, I took a drive from Hamilton towards the Big Smoke. When I arrived, I asked if I could take a photo.
Well, do you want the Sky Tower in it or not?
Can you see it from here?
You can, yes. At night, you can see it glowing through the background there. But look, a bit misty today, so we won't get that in there.
I'm on the Donald Pearson farm with Brian Cartell. It's a 74-hectare farm on the doorstep of New Zealand's largest city.
We're just about in the centre. There's the crow flies. 10 km away, we're in intensive urban. There's a lot of lifestyle blocks up the road. This would be the only dairy farm probably in Whitford now. When we moved into Whitford in the late 50s, it was all dairy farm, but no, it's definitely changed.
This farm is now owned by the not-for-profit organisation New Zealand Young Farmers. That's all thanks to the generosity of Donald Pearson. He'd spent a lifetime milking cows and, before his death at the age of 77 in 2016, had been working with his friend Brian through options for his farm's future.
Yeah, so as part of Donald's will, the farm was to be gifted to New Zealand Young Farmers, the stock and all the farming equipment. So it was a going concern that was gifted to New Zealand Young Farmers. We looked at six different organisations with Donald, the lawyer, and we ended up interviewing sort of two, and that was Federated Farmers and New Zealand Young Farmers. And we felt that New Zealand Young Farmers was more aligned to the direction that we wanted to go.
Did he keep milking as long as he could?
Absolutely, yep. We just about had to take him out of the shed and put him in hospital. Yeah, he was a man for the land. If he had probably taken a step back a couple of years earlier, he may be with us today, but he was, like I say, he was a worker, he was a man for the land. He wanted to keep the farm as a one unit and for the advancement of the agri-education in New Zealand. So, like I said, the calf days, the local calf days with the school, he got a lot out of the children actually coming to the farm, picking a calf and then showing it at calf day. And at the, you know, at the AMP show. So did that for years. He supported the intellectually handicapped by raising calves and selling them. And he, like I say, he got a lot of people onto the farm that were interested in it. And hence the direction to keep it in one block and keep it as a dairy farm.
Was he a little bit worried about the farm becoming developed and housing being built on the land?
Yeah, he was really worried about that. And to be fair, the farm with that many road frontages on the farm would be a very easy farm to develop. So, yeah, in a developer's eye, it would be gold, but not in Donald's eyes. He saw it had different value in it.
Did you put a dollar figure on it?
No. No, we didn't have to. It didn't have a sale and purchase agreement, so it didn't need a dollar value.
Have you any idea what this land's worth?
Yes.
And?
Us young farmers.
A few million.
Yep. With a multiplier on there of probably 4.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, but that's the man's wishes. And that's what we're trying to honour.
Young Farmers says the farm provides it a wonderful opportunity to excite urban students about careers in agriculture. But at the moment, Brian says it's a case of first things first, getting the 100-cow farm into a well-managed state before possibly seeking support to build an education centre.
Well, in 10 years' time, it would be good to have the education facility up and running, like a classroom, a welcome centre, a little bit of a museum showing the history of the farm. And a productive farm. Now, it could have elements of different stock on there. but it would still be good to have it as a dairy farm. And if we can bring some corporate sponsorship in, it will definitely help the development of the farm.
The farm's new manager is 27-year-old Sam Waugh, who coincidentally happens to be a Young Farmers member. He raced home to New Zealand just before lockdown and moved onto the farm in April. They've been waiting for this all day.
Yeah, they have been. They always like their new break of grass.
Were you excited when you got the job?
Yeah, I was very excited. Like I say, coming back from the UK and the sort of uniqueness of this job makes it a really, really exciting opportunity.
How's it going?
It's been good. It's been a bit of an induction by fire, and coming out of the drought, we've had definitely a lot of challenges, but it's been pretty exciting and a good new challenge.
So what have you done before?
Done a few things. I spent a bit of time in Canterbury working as a dairy farm consultant. Spent about 4 years down there. And then actually was overseas in the UK for the last 2 years, working on different farms and systems in the UK before coming home to this job. I went to Lincoln University, did an ag commerce degree down there.
Tell me about the herd that you've inherited.
Yeah, so the herd we've got is predominantly a Jersey-based herd now, and we've got a few milk and shorthorns still in the herd as well. So we're currently targeting to milk about 100, 110 cows next season.
Because it's not a huge farm, is it? It's, a, what did you say, 74 hectares?
Yeah, so it's 74 hectares total and about 63 hectares effective. So definitely not a big farm in terms of New Zealand dairy farming standards.
So what made you want to apply for it?
Probably two parts, really. One was around the chance to get back onto a New Zealand farm and get stuck in on that end, but also being able to be involved with the education component of what the farm's trying to achieve, I think, is something really exciting. And that's something that I'm quite passionate about. So very keen to sort of help develop and grow that side of the business just as much as sort of get the farm running smoothly as well.
So what would you like to see here?
It would be pretty cool to be able to showcase the agri sector to urban people, particularly children, I think. Being so close to Auckland, it's a real good opportunity to bring people, you know, 15, 20 minutes from where they live into a completely different world, and show them what's possible out in the country, but also showcasing what happens from pasture to plate as well. So helping to educate not just around farming, but around the other sectors in the agri sector.
They're not shy, are they, these cows?
No, they're not. Definitely like a good pat, a good rub. They're very docile and don't mind people walking through them.
She's just opening the gate.
Yeah, that's one of the friendly ones.
This farm isn't flat. It's more than undulating, really.
Yeah, it's definitely got some steep parts to it. Not your typical flat dairy farm that you see on a lot of videos and pictures. But one thing I think this farm has, which is a real good asset, is it's got a lot of native trees and a lot of bird life as well, which I think makes it a very pretty farm, which again will help with, I guess, showcasing, you know, the beauty of living on a country lifestyle.
Do you have a herd home?
Yes, we do have a herd home. Yeah, so that will that's come in handy at the moment while we're pretty dry and don't have a lot of grass. Sort of helped keep cows off the grass and stop them from overgrazing. And it will come in just as handy in the winter. I've been told by quite a few people this farm gets very wet.
Did Donald Pearson get off this farm much?
Not much, to be fair. Look, he had a path from the farm to Papakura to Pukekohe, and that was predominantly for supplies, be that for the farm or for himself. But no, not a great tourer. I remember when his father passed away, we had to take him, Donald, into Auckland, and he had never seen the Harbour Bridge. He had never seen the Harbour Bridge. He had always gone south. He had never gone through that way. He just, again, he was a man for the farm, and that was his life.
Yeah. How old would he have been then?
Probably 30 years ago now, so Donald would have been sort of mid-40s. I asked Donald, he spoke of Ireland, you know, and his dad spoke of Ireland, and I asked him if he ever wanted to go back, because I would have sort of gone with him to, but no, just those big tin birds scare him, you know, so he didn't go there.
No.
Did he have Irish ancestry?
Yes, absolutely. Yep. Yeah. His father came out originally and was working up towards Mangatiroto, hand-spreading fertiliser. That's how, what he came out to do from Ireland.
You said that on Christmas Day you'd pick him up to come to Christmas dinner.
Yeah, we'd pick him up. He'd come in for Christmas lunch with us and then we'd drop him back to the farm, you know. That was the biggest concern, leaving the farm. He liked the farm, he liked the stock, and that was his commitment.
Brian Cartel remembering Donald Pearson. You also heard from farm manager Sam Moore.
Banks Peninsula horticulturist Cornelia Holton established the Korukai Herb Farm at Pigeon Bay with support from her husband Kai in 2013. They wanted to be self-sufficient in food and health products. She tells Cosmo Kentish Barnes why she likes living on the slopes of the out-of-the-way valley.
I just love the hills on both sides, and then I can see down to the ocean and it's Pigeon Bay, but I can also see the gap where it's right up to the open ocean. It's it's magical, and whenever we have people coming up to the farm, they just say, wow, this is spectacular. It's just so peaceful. You know, no exit road. There's no traffic apart from when someone comes to us or to the neighbours. It's quiet, yeah.
The hill on the other side of the valley is quite steep, and there are lots of sheep dotted around, aren't there?
Yes, that's the neighbouring farms, sheep and beef farms. And I actually just see them mustering some sheep. They're going through the fence to the other side. You see that big patch of sheep there.
Yes.
It's like, you know, watching Country Calendar live. It's nice when you work and be in the garden and you just look up and you see the mustering sheep. You can see the dogs actually right behind them. Yeah, it's stunning.
It's like a creamy wave working its way across the hill.
Pretty fast in that steep bit. No, they're going down to the, just between the rocks.
How did you and Kai end up in Pigeon Bay?
We wanted to be self-sufficient. That was our main driver. We had an urban section in Christchurch, and we ran out of growing space. So we decided, when I was pregnant with our first child, Nicholas, to just, you know, do the leap and look for a bigger property. And I grew up on a dairy farm, and I love cows. And it was also that, you know, that component that I wanted to have a cow and milk and, yeah, make butter, cheese and yogurt. So, yeah, we ended up looking for properties around Little River and out of Christchurch. And, yeah, kept looking further and further for properties that don't have a massive fancy house that is very expensive, but just have something basic that we can base ourselves on and have a nice property. So, we actually found this little piece of paradise. And so half of it is a native bush, which we love to go for walks to, and we've got lots of kānaka there. And the other half is paddock. And then a big slice we have for vegetable garden. The herb farm is taking up more and more space as we grow.
Mm. So where are you from originally?
I grew up in Germany on a 20-cow dairy farm, small scale, how it was just normal in the days. And when dairy farms got bigger and bigger, my parents actually stopped dairying because it was just not economic to stay this small. And yeah, it was just a little village in Bavaria. And I went to university in Germany before we came here, and I'm a primary teacher. Mm. And I also educated myself in Montessori education. And yeah, I've worked in Christchurch for a number of years before we moved out here.
And you've got two children that you homeschool?
Yes, so I can still do that part of my education. Now I've studied 5 years, also did a master's degree in education, and now I can still use it with my children.
What a great place to grow up for the kids.
Yeah, they absolutely love it. They love to be on the farm, they love lambing time and calving time, they love the cow, yeah.
Now we are standing in your herb garden right now, and this is the centre point of your business, really, isn't it?
Yes, the herb garden is our main business point. We wouldn't have a business without the garden. We make the compost, we plant the herbs, and we grow them right from seed to harvest and processing it, and then we package it up for our customers and send it with our local courier to your doorstep. So, yeah, it's really from the seed to the finish. We do everything on the farm.
How many herbs are you growing here?
I did a count up one day, and it was about 80 herbs that we are growing, and 40 herbs are the ones that we use commercially, that we grow big batches from and that we harvest on a yearly basis. And then some are harvested 3 times a year, and some are harvested just once a year, or actually every 2 years. But yeah, it's 40 herbs.
Now, even though we're heading into winter, the garden's still looking very green. It looks like you are still harvesting.
Yes, and there's stuff already growing that like the garlic is already coming up, and that we've planted in April, May. And there's, our food crops like the leek and the carrots, they're still green. And yeah, brassica for the winter food. Yeah, they're all there, all green. But other parts of the garden, they are dormant now. They have been finished cropping, been cutting down, they're brown. Mm. Or in that other area over there, there's the root harvest that we have completed. So the crowns are in the ground waiting to emerge next spring. Mm.
What sort of roots have you been digging up recently?
We have been digging up elecampane root, which is a great medicinal herb for the lungs. We've also done marshmallow root and licorice and horseradish root. So horseradish root we use lots in preparations also for eating as a food supply. And another one is echinacea root that we're having over there. It still hasn't been dug yet, but that's the next one that we're going to dig in the next couple of weeks. The aerial part has died down, so we know it's ready to dig.
Does that end up in one of your immune booster recipes?
Yes, the echinacea root goes into a health elixir for adults and goes into a number of throat sprays for sore throat. It's a great herb just at the onset of a disease when you just feel your throat is a bit scratchy and you kind of feel like you're coming up with a cold, then echinacea is the one to take. So that's why it goes into those immune support products for the early signs of a disease.
Over the COVID lockdown, there must have been a huge increase in demand for a product like that.
Yes, we had massive increase in demand. It was just when we had the first case of COVID-19 in New Zealand, our order spiked within just a few hours, and I actually didn't know what was going on, but the website was just blinking with new orders coming in for the health elixir, for the elderberry syrup, for throat sprays and all of that. So then I had to go into the news and actually look what was happening. And yeah, that was the first case of COVID-19, unfortunately.
And the other thing that you were selling a lot of was your sourdough bread kits.
Yes, because we're self-sufficient, we like to share what we do on the farm. And the sourdough starter that we're selling online come with a full recipe book. And because in the lockdown, people were just wanting to bake their own bread. And with that, we could support them in this. And yeah, it was lovely for us to spend the lockdown period helping other people to on their own bread baking journey. And I hope, the 200 people that got the sourdough starter within those 4 weeks, I hope they continue making their own bread.
So much fun making bread, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's so delicious.
How did you learn about herbs and making natural medicines and things like that?
When we moved to the farm, my drive was to be self-sufficient, and one part is food and the other part is also medicine. And for me, I felt like I don't have the connection to the plant world because it just has been lost through the last couple of generations, I guess. Normally it was just passed on to the children how to use the plants around you as your medicine. So I wanted to get education in that, especially to just help ourselves and help when the children are having a sore throat, just be able to going out in the garden and grabbing a herb and making a herbal tea. So I did an apprenticeship in herbal medicine at Phyto Farm in Little River. I went for a whole year, and on some days I actually took my son with me for the study part. And yeah, with that, I just soared and loved the process. And the last module was actually, now come up with a product, come up with a business plan. And I was like, oh dear, didn't really plan on that. I was just, wanting to be self-sufficient and grow my own medicine. But yeah, we actually came up with a product, which was the baby bottom balm, which was needed for our baby because he had, you know, sore bottoms. And yeah, it helped really well. And so we thought we just should give it a go, give it a crack and start planting herbs. And when we had the business plan, it took us another 6 to 9 months before we could have a harvestable crop. And yeah, because it's just from the base up. Didn't want to buy anything. I just wanted to grow it.
So you started with one product. And now how many products do you sell?
I actually don't know. I'd have to check, but it's over 50 products. Yeah. It turned out really well for us, and now we have a thriving business, and we can actually starting to support our family. And my husband is working less and less on his other job and being more and more working on the farm, which is awesome. Yeah, and for us it will be a family income. Yeah.
Now, as well as growing all these different herbs and making products out of them, you also run workshops here, and they're becoming very popular.
Yes, they are very popular. We started with courses around 3 years ago, or maybe 4 years ago, actually. And all the courses we've run over the last 2 years, they've always been full. And I like to learn a lot, and I will never stop learning. And I want to pass it on to others, pass on that you can be self-sufficient, that you can live a healthier life. And yeah, food, that food is the basis for our health. And yeah, that's what I want to teach other people and help them along on their journey.
And so people come here and do the courses on your farm here?
Yeah, right on the farm. Like the next one is on Sunday about medicinal herbs for winter well-being. And we will be just spending the first hour just in the garden. We'll be digging up some roots, especially horseradish, maybe some echinacea. We'll be foraging for some plantain and for yarrow. And then we go into the kitchen and then we make products with it.
What other courses do you run here?
The next one I run after that is organic gardening course with the Soil Food Web. I've done training with soil microbiologist Dr. Elaine Ingham. That was 2 years ago, and we are seeing massive results on the farm as we grow herbs, food, and, you know, grass crop for the cows and the sheep. And yeah, it's a massive need in the country at the moment with the regenerative ag movement. And I want to be there helping them just to that they know more about the soil food web. We are nothing without soil health. I can grow as many herbs as I want, but if we don't look after the soil and base that as our fundamental baseline, having a healthy soil, that's where our health is anchored, and that's where I need to do education and help others to see that, because then we need less herbs and less herbal remedies if we're just healthy and our bodies work the best.
What are your favourite plants here that you grow?
You can't ask me that. They're all looking. You know, I'd have to pick the one that's right next to me. And it's actually really hard to say. I love the herb that I'm working with right at that moment. Yeah, that gives me joy. I really like calendula. It was one of the first ones that we grew, and it's an amazing herb that we can use internally and externally. And stinging nettle is also one of our favorite herbs, and we have, because stinging nettle for us gives a bridge between nutrition, food, and medicine.
What type of nettle are you talking about?
That's the European nettle. I'm not talking about onga onga. Onga onga, probably, as you know, that's the native New Zealand nettle. A very ferocious sting, you have to be very careful. I don't harvest it at this stage. I've done a course in Rongoa Māori, and Donna Carriage said that the only way she would use it is as a detox after chemotherapy, for example. But I have not looked into that. But yeah, onga onga we have on the farm. But I'm talking about the annual and perennial nettle.
I'm keen to meet your cow.
Sure.
Should we walk down the hill and go and say hello?
Let's meet Lulu. Let's do that.
Your land is quite steep, and that's why you are going to do some terracing, aren't you?
Yes, like the terrace we just have behind us, we've done 3 years ago. So it was an unusable area with just rocks. We couldn't even do an orchard there. Mm. So we've terraced that, and this is, yeah, it's been a thriving garden now. And with this little testing area, we're now going bigger scale, and we're going to terrace a fourth of our paddock down in the bottom valley. And yeah, we want to do 3 big terraces so that we can actually keep up with the demand for our medicinal herbs. We want to do a commercial tunnel house as well so that we can grow tulsi, turmeric, ginger as well.
It's a real sunspot, this sloping paddock.
Yeah, so this is north facing here. It's beautiful, especially on a day like today. It's just stunning.
In the paddock are, 5 or 6 ewes?
Yeah, 5 ewes and 1 ram. That's our 5 breeding ewes. They're Wiltshire, so they shed their wools naturally. You see, they just have that nice thick coat now, not overly long. They don't grow too much length. And then they shed that at the, around September, October. And then they get, even shorter. And then all the wool is lying around in the paddock and the birds take it as nesting material. Yeah, very easy care sheep, so we don't have to tail them. Very clean, good browsers. And yeah, that's part of our self-sufficiency because we sell surplus ewe lambs and the boy lambs we keep for us for the freezer.
Mm. There's a cow in the paddock with them, and just across in another paddock, there's another older cow.
Yes, the older cow is our cow Lulu. That's the one we're milking at the moment. And the other one that's with the sheep, that's a heifer who is in calf now. And yeah, we're very excited. She's going to be having her calf in early September, and then we will start milking her.
You're going to have a lot of milk in spring.
Yes, we will. Oh, gosh. It'll be interesting. When Lululu usually calves, it's around 22 litres a day at the start. Actually, 24 at the very start, dropping down then to 20 litres. And then when we go back to, like, once a day milking, it's around 10 litres a day. And if it gets too much, and especially when we wean the calf, and then it's just too much for us, then we get pigs. And those pigs take all the surplus that we can't use up. And they're also really good at using up all the whey from the cheese making to not have anything wasted,
What sort of cheese do you make?
I like to make soft cheeses. I like mozzarella and feta. And, we make cream cheese and also some halloumi as well.
Did your parents used to make cheese back on the farm in Bavaria?
No, they didn't. I learned everything here, but we did do butter, and which was just the best butter ever. We had the really old butter churn, the one with wood that you just turn the handle, and it took a whole day to make the butter, but it was so worth it. We didn't do it very often because it was very labor intense. Now I do it in my Kenwood mixer.
The joys of modern technology.
Exactly. The modern lifestyle, make it a bit faster, but it's still the same deliciousness.
The paddocks here are very lush and thick underfoot.
Yes, we've worked really hard on the pasture. We're not there yet, but we're getting there. We've got a nice mixture of clover, yarrow and plantain. The yarrow is this one. It's just, you can just see the small leaves. It's called Achillea millefolium, the plant of 1,000 leaves.
So there's a real smorgasbord of food here for the cows and sheep.
Yeah, it's a nice, good forage for them. And we've had some areas that haven't been growing really well. So I did a soil test. So in those areas where we didn't have that growth, we could find that we were lacking fungi. We could be finding that we're lacking those nutrient cyclists. So we've been applying compost extract to those areas, and we've seen massive improvement. The clover has just been going crazy over the last summer period. And because of that, our beehives did really well. And we've been having the bees for 4 years now. And it was the first summer that we could harvest 25 kilos of honey, mainly clover and carnauba. It is because we did the applications of compost extract on the paddock. This grew so much clover and could just bring a bit more balance. We're not there yet. lots more needs to be done.
We are walking up to Cornelia's special friend, who is lying down, munching away and enjoying that warm sun on her back. Hello, Lulu.
Why didn't you bring me any food, she's saying.
How many calves has Lulu had?
She's had 3 calves with us, and I think all up she's had 6 calves so far. She's ready to go to a bull. We've had her for the last 5 years, and yeah, she's very loyal and very, very good cow.
What are your plans for the future, your long-term plans?
The plan is for us to do like lots of education, educating other people, for us to learn more, to grow the herb farm, and yeah, just continue as we are doing it.
Cornelia Holton on Banks Peninsula. If you'd like to see some photos of this and other stories, you can go to the Country Life page on the RNZ website.
Until next week, goodbye.
Bye now.